Care Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, I was reading a couple of articles over the weekend, and they all said the essence of the Fianna Fáil Ardéis was, after a spell in the shadow of their coalition partners, Fianna Fáil will be back in the limelight at the weekend with an Ardéis that they hope can bring some momentum behind the party as it heads into the elections in June. While many in the party concede that they could do with the much vaunted new energy being claimed by Fine Gael under the leadership of new Taoiseach Simon Harris, they are apparently not too troubled by the changeover. Well, local Fianna Fáil TD James Lawless is on the line now. Good morning to you, James, and thanks for joining us. Before we talk about what was discussed at the Fianna Fáil Ardéis, a reaction from what's happening in Fine Gael. The Fine Gael TDs that we've spoken to would say that it's a time of transition, renewal. Of course they'd say that. They're not going to say we're falling apart here at the seams. What do you make of it in Fianna Fáil?
Well, look, I suppose my business is Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael, what they do internally is up to themselves, and the programme for government made provision if any of the parties change leaders or change ministers or whatever. That was an internal matter. It was the three parties that were together, not the individuals. Look, I wish Simon Harris all the best. He's a decent fellow. I know him through his ministries. I've dealt with him on a few matters over the last couple of years. Found him very pleasant. He's a neighbour, obviously, over Micklow, a neighbour of ours here. But ultimately, I suppose my job is to do my job as Chair of the Justice Committee and as a Fianna Fáil TD for North Kildare. I actually had the honour of introducing our leader, Micheál Martin, at the Ardéis on Friday night. And I made a point, I said, this is a man who has led us through the 2014 local elections and 2019 local elections to be the biggest party in local government on both occasions. Led us back into government in 2020, led us back into the Taoiseach's office. So I might have made a mischievous reference to musical chairs being played in other parties in the course of my introduction, but look, I wish the man well. But ultimately, we have a solid rock at the top of our party who is leading by example and going from strength to strength. So we're not overly, certainly not concerned. We wish him well. But look, we have to do our job to put our Fianna Fáil values and policies to the people. Mm-hmm. And we certainly won't be put off by what anyone else might be doing.
So no suggestion of Fianna Fáil following suit? There won't be a change at the top, or no calls for a change at the top as of yet?
No, certainly not now. I mean, look, there was a couple of mushrooms a couple of years ago, and that's normal. And in the political process, there's always, there's always talk. It wouldn't be healthy or natural if there wasn't always an internal debate. But I think right now the party is quite settled. We have a very successful leader who is consistently the top-ranking leader in all the opinion polls. When they look at the party leaders across the board, he's popular with the people. Anytime, I mean, I've been out in Naas and Clane and Maynooth with him in recent times, walking the streets and meeting people, and people are queuing up, young and old, looking to get selfies, looking to meet him, looking to shake his hand. He's a very popular man, and I suppose more important than that, you know, we can all be into the selfies and the quick fix, but he's also a man of substance. I heard him on yesterday talking about the Iranian situation. You know, he's a Minister for Foreign Affairs. He gets the gravitas. He's around a while. He's experienced to deal with those things. So, look, I think he's doing extremely well. And there's no question he'll be leading us into local and European elections in June, and indeed into the general election later this year, early next year. And look, I would not be at all surprised, and I'll be working to make it happen, that he's back at the Taoiseach's office again in 6 months' time or 12 months' time.
All right, you are the chair of the Oireachtas Justice Committee, and I know the Fianna Fáil Ardéis debated motions to increase Garda resources in order to tackle antisocial behaviour. Some in Fianna Fáil expressed concerns that Helen McEntee was not removed as Minister for Justice as part of Simon Harris's cabinet reshuffle. Would you be one of those TDs that would have liked to have seen maybe a change in ministry well, when it comes to justice?
Yes, effectively, in the sense that I think we need to see a stronger approach taken. I think we need to see somewhat of a tilt in direction. I've been saying that for a couple of years. I've published dozens of reports through the Justice Committee that I chair, a lot of which, to be honest, have been critical of the department and of the minister's approach. I think it's been a bit too softly. There is a time for carrot and time for stick, but we've seen an awful lot of carrot and not so much stick in the last couple of years. And actually, I published quite a heart-hitting report only a few months ago. And I have to say, before the recent political climate, you know, people say things changed after the referendums, and they did, I suppose, politically. But I've been saying this for a couple of years, so there's nothing new here for me. But I was saying, look, we need to get tough. The Dublin riots, to me, were actually predictable. It was a shocking, outrageous incident, but it was actually coming down the track. We could see it. Anyone that was following social media or even out and about in town in the city centre could see the sort of unrest that was building and the kind of negativity and nastiness that was building up on online forums. So, like, I think the minister has to get, you know, I think perhaps a new minister could have cracked the whip a bit harder.
Yeah. Do you think Minister McEntee is in over her head as Minister for Justice? And if you wanted to see that reshuffle, who do you think could have done a better job as Minister for Justice?
Well, that's an easy one, me, of course.
Really? Would you have put yourself forward for it?
Yeah, well, look, I'm half joking, but all in earnest. Like, I am a barrister. I chaired the Justice Committee. I'm in it all 8 years. The reason I say I'm partly joking is because it's not, unfortunately, the ministries are allocated according to the party's positions. So there's I think, five for us, five for Fine Gael, and three for the Green Party. So there's an allocation resource there. But certainly, if the Justice portfolio was to come around to Fianna Fáil after the next election or in a reshuffle, I would think I could make a strong case to the Taoiseach to take it up. I mean, I have been effectively marketing that portfolio for the last 4 years as Chair of the Justice Committee. As I say, I am a barrister. I spent many years both in the courts and dealing with people in different difficult situations and with both political and professional interest. So certainly I would love to be assigned that job. But look, that's up to the party leader in each reshuffle. And look, I am ambitious. I that day may come. It may not. But look, either way, look, I suppose my most important job is serving the people of North Kildare, and that's what I do day to day.
Okay, before we move on from that then, if you were brought in as Minister for Justice, what would you change? What do you think that Helen McEntee has done wrong? You said that there's time for a carrot and time for a stick. So how would you transform, so to speak, the Justice portfolio?
Well, one of the first things I would do is change the consultation process. So we have at the moment a system, and this is partly, I think, why the referendums, the whole vote down of those came into being. The system is geared around listening to voices from the edges. And that sounds very worthy, and minorities, of course, should get a voice. But I think the wheel has gone full circle over the last decade or so. For now, it's actually the minority and fringe voices are getting a louder hearing in the Dáil and in committees and in public consultations, including in local government and all the different consultations that are held. And the ordinary man and woman who are getting up in the morning, going to work, dropping kids to a creche, getting on a bus or a train or into their cars, going about their day-to-day job, paying their mortgage and worrying about whether the milk has gone off in the fridge, as your previous listener was earlier on, they don't have time to sit down and write a 1,000-word response to an Oireachtas committee or a 20-page submission to a council consultation, because they're too busy getting on with life. So I think somehow we've actually jumped. And there was a time when minorities were not heard, and that wasn't right either. But we've actually gone full circle now. So we've all these NGOs, state-funded, to come in and send us in position papers. And frankly, they get far too much attention. I think we just need to tilt the balance back a little bit, have those voices in the room, but have counter voices to say, well, that's fine. But actually, you know, we need to focus on the mainstream issues as well. I think that might be is being lost to a certain extent.
Okay, one of those mainstream issues then, housing, comes up time and time again. And I know it was discussed at your Ardesh as well. And some in Fianna Fáil complained that the promise by Simon Harris at the Fine Gael Ardesh that 250,000 houses would be built over 5 years was an attempt to steal a march on what is likely to be a change in government policy to ramp up housing targets. Were you surprised when Simon Harris said 250,000, a quarter of a million houses, will be built here in Ireland over the next 5 years?
Well, I suppose it was slightly more realistic than Ivana Bacic, who I think said there's only a million houses built in the same space of time. But look, there's nothing wrong with ambition, okay? There's nothing wrong with people setting high targets and high standards for themselves. What we have been saying, and over the weekend we were debating, obviously the housing was one of the key workshops again. We are now hitting 33,000 last year. So I think the initial target, the plan with Housing for All, was to have a slow start because it was only getting out of the traps and there was a skilled shortage, there was a material shortage, there was a planning permission backlog. And the initial targets were kind of 15,000, 20,000, building to 25, building to 30, building to 40,000. So we already have in the plan by the next couple of years to be hitting 40,000. We're on 33,000 last year. So it was always intended that those targets would move upwards as we got into gear. It's like a big machine being turned on. It takes a while to grind into gear. But once you get going, it's not that hard to plug in an extra 2,000, extra 5,000 and so on. So look, is 250,000 achievable? I don't know, but it's certainly a good target to aim at. But I do know Darragh O'Brien is doing a very good job of getting where we are today and the team around him. He's already surpassing targets. I think we are beginning to see it on the ground. There are new estates, both private, affordable and social, opening up at the moment all around us. I put out a newsletter recently and I was saying to people, there's a variety of schemes available to get you on the ladder if you're a first-time buyer, first home scheme, shared equity scheme, first home grant. I was inundated with people coming back to me saying, can you send me on the details? And I did, and they're very happy to be getting. And actually, I'll just say again in your programme, if anybody wants to contact me, I have all sorts of information about those schemes. There's some really good schemes.
Yeah. What about social housing, though? Those who are falling in between the cracks or can't get a mortgage or can't afford rent, etc. Is the government doing enough in terms of social housing? And you mentioned the fact that, you know, it's okay to set targets and to be ambitious. The opposition, particularly Sinn Féin, would say that the government continue to miss targets. So it depends on what way you look at that. But anyway, going back to the original question of social housing. Is the government doing enough?
So the government's doing lots. Is it doing enough? I suppose it can never do enough, really. I heard someone from the Simon community being interviewed earlier, and they were saying, I think the current target was about 10,000. They were saying, really, should be aiming for 13,000. So there's always going to be a stretch goal to say, look, could we do a little bit more? Can we go a little bit beyond? Like, if I look around Kildare, Leixlip, there's new social housing came on stream. Kilcock, there's new social housing being opened up, I think, maybe even this week. Salon, the teacher himself, me and Martin, when he was teacher, was there last year, opening up an extension to Castle Fen, with social housing going in across Naas and up in Kill with social housing going in at the moment. So there are social housing schemes being built right across the county. Obviously, again, there was, I suppose, a lost number of years when the houses weren't being built and the council stopped building houses. And I think that was a mistake. And I suppose what we're trying to do now is the affordable housing bodies are working with the councils. They're almost like have taken over from the councils as state-funded agencies that are building out housing and social housing. And I suppose we need to have it at all levels. We need to have the social housing for people that really are struggling. We need affordable housing for people that say, look, I want to have my own house, I want to get the deeds, but I'm just not quite there for a mortgage. And a lot of the schemes I'm talking about will help bridge that gap, and the affordable housing obviously helps as well. And then private housing for people say, look, keys to my own front door, that's what I want. And, you know, the more houses we have available, the better supplies in the market, prices begin to moderate a little bit then as well. So, you know, I suppose it's a simple and yet a very complex solution. Build lots of houses is a simple solution. How do you actually do that is complicated in the detail.
Right.
But ultimately, it hasn't changed from what ultimately came into government, and we're trying our very best to do that.
Was immigration discussed at the Ardesh at the weekend, James?
So my colleague John Naharsh, TD for Tala, put together a policy paper on immigration, which was discussed at the weekend. I contributed to that paper. A number of us did. Jim McCallaghan did as well. He's the Chambers. We had a couple of sessions even before the weekend, running into it, kind of putting together some thoughts. Amongst some of the things we discussed were the idea that if somebody has documents getting onto a plane in Eastern Europe or in Africa or wherever they're coming from, and all of a sudden they don't have any documents when they arrive into Ireland, well, that's not good enough, and that seems to me to be a very bogus exercise. So we're talking about making that perhaps an offence, or certainly having that person being returned to where they started out from if they have documents at the start of a journey and not at the end. We also think more pressure should be put on the airlines to say, look, if you're going to be bringing people in and not properly checking the documentation or not being verified, there can be fines imposed upon them. If somebody was to commit a crime while in Ireland, there is some provision, but it's rarely applied for deportation. I don't see why that couldn't be ramped up. Ultimately, if people are coming here seeking refuge and seeking shelter, of course we're going to say you're welcome and we do what we can to help you. But if somebody's coming here, transpires to be bogus, and ends up actually committing offences while they're here, I don't see any reason why the Irish state should get the red carpet rolled out for them. In actual fact, we should put them on a plane and say, I'm very sorry, you've messed up back where you started out.
Okay, do you think that the public is still as supportive of the government in terms of immigration maybe as when the war in Ukraine started or when what happened in Gaza started? Because we're seeing time and time again, and we would get messages in here, I know you would get emails and messages to you as well, James, saying, why is this not being done for the Irish people, for example, and why is so much being spent on those people coming into this country? Is it because the government are singing to the EU tune? What do you say back to people when they contact you like that, with comments like that?
Yeah, well, like you said, I do get multiple comments like that every single day, phone calls, emails, texts, etc., on many issues, but immigration increasingly so. And I've had those conversations as well, both in government and in my clinics, and I suppose this is something we've all been talking about a lot over the last 18, 12 months. One answer I give to that is one that was put to me, and I think it's fair. If we had said 3 years ago, I said pre-Ukraine, pre the refugee crisis that we're experiencing now, we're going to push Irish people into modular housing. We're going to take shipping containers, cut them in half, and put two families, one on each side of them. There probably would have been an outcry. There might have been protests at the Dáil, protests at the county council, saying, how dare you put people into containers? How dare you put people into fields? Don't even I won't even go over there in terms of putting people into tents. But I expect there would have been an absolute outrage about doing that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I see the point you're making when it comes to the shipping containers and the tents, but at the same time, what about hotels and other buildings that have been converted now? I know there's an emergency situation, but there also is an emergency in terms of homelessness here in this country.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So in terms of the hotels, that was being done. So if you look at, say, the likes of the Dublin inner city, if you go down to the likes of Dorset Street or some of the streets around Connolly Station, many of those hotels, I actually have a friend that lives on that street, and he tells me that where that was once guest houses and hotels and B&Bs, people arriving off the train for a weekend in Dublin, maybe book in somewhere like Gardiner Street and spend the weekend exploring the city, they have for a long time been gone off the tourist map because they're used for a combination of Irish homeless people or homeless people that are in the state. And bear in mind, not every person that's homeless is Irish. Actually, a lot of the homeless persons are also immigrants, people that arrived here over the last couple of years or even previously. So you tend to have quite a high mix of ethnicities on the homeless lists. But in any event, those hotels were being used for a combination of homelessness and now increasingly for immigration. So that was being done. I suppose what we're seeing differently now is that extra hotels, so it was always the case that many of those guest houses and B&Bs were being used for homeless accommodation anyway. And I suppose because that system is really struggling now, it's at the pinch point because of the sheer volume of numbers, primarily because of Ukraine, they're more and more being pressed into service. Now, I have said, and it's in our policy paper that we published at the Ardèche, that we strongly believe the idea that taking particularly smaller villages and towns, where there's a working hotel that maybe has a canteen, has a restaurant, a bar, a place that functions 21st, you know, parties, communions, etc. The idea that that would be taken away and commandeered into accommodation and that would be a service lost to the community is just not acceptable. So where there's a last hotel, as we call it, you know, where there's one viable hotel in an area, that should be protected and not, you know, not taken away from the community.
Right.
And the other thing we said was if there are hotels, even if there's not the last hotel, there's no reason why the services shouldn't continue. So the coffee shop, the canteen, the bar, you know, why does that have to close down as well? Because in many communities, that's the place where people meet for the GA Club committee, as I say, for the 21st, for just for the chat, you know, for the Sunday roast. And that's a community service. And, right. And if we take away everything, all we have left is people, you know, is beds and roads. We need to have some kind of social fabric as well.
Before I let you go, James, Bertie Ahern favours a general election in the summer. I don't know if there's any particular reason for that other than he says it's warm and it's bright until 10:30. So he thinks a general election should happen during the summer. But he does think that this coalition will stay in office until next February. When do you think the next general election will be called, James?
Yeah, I heard Bertie say that. I saw him at the Ardèche and I heard him say that. And Bertie is a wise man. He was around a long time. He won 3 successive general elections himself. I suppose the difference, I completely understand what he's saying. It's easier, you know, people are in better mood. They're more inclined to be opening the door to a canvasser, someone like me calling to the door on a fine evening in May or June. But you know what? I suppose when Bertie was there, the elections fell that way, that the term used to end around May or June in each of his terms, whatever way the timing worked out. The cycle of elections were in the last couple of terms. They come full term each February. I think, look, I suppose I'll be ready myself. I'm canvassing at the moment with the local election candidates around Kildare anyway, and with Barry Cowan, who's our local neighbouring MEP candidate. I've been doing a good bit with him in the last few weeks, and we'll be with him again on Nation on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we're kind of ready for an election, but I suppose my if I was to guess it, I'm thinking probably early next year because I think there is a new Taoiseach and he will want to put a stamp on things. And I suppose the government as a whole, including things we're talking about like housing, you know, they'll want to deliver.
Do you think it should be called before that, though? Just to put everything else aside from your own opinion, do you think there needs to be a general election called or is the government just kind of saying, oh no, we need to stay in here until the end of the term? What's your personal view?
I'm somewhat agnostic on it. I've no difficulty if an election was called today, tomorrow, or next week. I think probably wouldn't be a good idea holding it with the local and European elections because we just confuse things. You know, you've already got 2 ballot papers. You'd end up having 3 ballot papers, and I think, you know, the campaigns would get contradictory and all the rest of it.
Mm.
I personally would have no issue with an election being called after the summer, say, you know, coming in September, October. I think it wouldn't be a bad time. But look, there's not much difference between September, October. I suppose the other thing is, at that stage, the focus is on the budget. You know, that is the biggest national delivery every year. That is extremely important for the country and everyone, whether you're paying taxes, whether you're getting welfare supports, whether you're availing of public services, be it health, housing, education, that is absolutely key every year. So we shouldn't be having an election on the eve of the budget. Right. But the far side of that, not a bad idea, you know, October. But look, I suppose ultimately it's only a matter of a couple of months either way. But once whatever government does come into office, the far side of that, I don't believe in chopping and changing like the English did at one stage. You know, every 12 months there's an election. I think whatever government or whatever party is in power, I think really you need a couple of years to put together a programme for government and do your very best to deliver it. And there will be teething troubles. You won't get everything done the first year. So you do need a couple of years at it. Once you've gone 4 years, you know, does it really make much difference the fifth year? I'm not sure. But yeah, I'm ready now anyway. So whenever it comes, I'll be looking forward to it.
Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare North, Chair of the Oireachtas Justice Committee, reflecting on the Fianna Fáil Ardaish that took place over the weekend and associated issues as well. James Lawless, thanks for that and good morning.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Let's move on then and talk about nursing homes. CEO of Nursing Homes Ireland, Tadhg Daly, is with me. And Tadhg, I was reading a couple of articles that you were quoted in recently. And the first thing that we'll discuss this morning is the Fair Deal Scheme. You say new nursing homes won't be built unless the Fair Deal Scheme is changed. Well, I know you've been on with us before, but just outline to us again what issues you have with the Fair Deal Scheme and how you think it could be changed.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not the only ones saying that, Owen, and good morning. I mean, there's been a myriad of government reports at this stage highlighting the challenges associated with Fair Deal. I mean, from the service user or the resident point of view, it's a good scheme, but from the provider and indeed the staff, it falls far short of what is required. And as I said, there's been a myriad of government reports. Ultimately, the scheme needs a revision and it also needs additional funding. In terms of revision, it needs to be focused on the care needs of the resident. At the moment, what you have is you have one fee for all residents, irrespective of their complexity, their dependency, or indeed their care needs. And furthermore, the HSE pays itself ultimately something in the order of almost €700 per resident per week more in their own facility. So it is discriminatory against providers, against staff, and more importantly, against residents.
Yeah, but that's the key point. You feel as though it's affecting everyone here, you know, in relation to the resident, the families, the nursing homes. Is anybody benefiting, in your view, apart from the HSE?
Well, I suppose the residents are getting high-quality care, but it could be much improved. And if you had a situation whereby, as I say, the care needs of the resident were factored into the funding mechanism. I mean, we've heard for years this notion of money following the patient, or in our case, money following the resident. And that's ultimately what needs to happen. But it also needs to inject confidence into the sector to ensure that we have a sustainable, viable nursing home sector into the future. I mean, people are living longer, and that's something to be celebrated. But we should be planning for that ageing demographic. And what we've seen over the last number of years is actually 76 nursing homes across the country have closed, over 2,500 beds taken out of the system. Whereas, in fact, we should be increasing the supply of all care of the older population, not just nursing homes, daycare, meals on wheels, independent living and home care. But we're actually going in the opposite direction. And my fear is that if we don't address the crisis that we have now, two things will happen. A, we may see further closures, which nobody wants, obviously, not least the residents. And B, there'll be no further capacity added, despite the fact that, as I say, we have an ageing population, and all of the talk in, I suppose, political and policy circles is the orientation of care from acute to community underschlagen to care. And the nursing home sector is a vital part of that continuum of care.
In relation to nursing home beds then, do you think that they would also be able to alleviate the pressure within hospitals and hospital overcrowding if patients were able to utilise those beds?
Absolutely, and that's the key, ultimately. I mean, what we need to do is, you know, rather than focusing on the nursing home or focusing on NHI or the HSE, focus on the individual. And if you talk to any individual who has been through a period of acute care in an acute hospital, once their acute phase of care is over, what they want to do is get back either to their own home or indeed to a home in their community. And that's where nursing home care comes in. So you look at the numbers of delayed discharges or delayed transfers of care in the HSE in any given day, up to 60 to 70% of those are people who are awaiting nursing home care. So the nursing home sector has, as I say, a vital role to play. as part of a well-functioning health service, providing long-term care, you know, respite, short-term and rehabilitation. And I, from Nursing Homes Ireland point of view, we're very proud of the staff who work in the sector providing that 24/7 care. But if we don't address the fundamental issue of funding for the provider, and indeed funding for staff who work in the sector, I mean, there's a huge discrepancy in pay rates between the public and the private sector. And that's down to the fact that government is lowballing the fees that they're paying to the operators in the private sector. So there are fundamental issues that need to be addressed. We'll be quite active in the weeks ahead leading up to the local elections to ensure that local candidates fully understand the issues that are there and what needs to be done to address them.
Chief Executive at Nursing Homes Ireland, Tadhg Daly, thanks as always, and good morning to you, Tadhg. Just in relation to health, while we're talking about hospitals and nursing homes, I see news breaking on The Independent that health insurer VHI is scrapping some of its most expensive plans in a move set to force thousands of its older members to get alternative cover. The plans removed are some of the most popular options taken out by consumers. Some of the people on these plans, which are variations on the old Plan B schemes, have had them continuously for 30 years. One of the schemes, being retired, costs up to $3,400 a year for one adult, and VHI's move to phase out the four leading plans would worry older members who renewed on these to retain full cover for major orthopaedic and ophthalmic procedures, said health insurance expert Dermot Good of totalhealthcover.ie. So the best thing to do if you think you may be affected by that, get in touch with VHI and see if your plan is one of the plans that they are going to scrap. You can also read more on The Independent, by the way, Charlie Weston writing that article.